Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. And for the next hour, we're going to be joined by our good friend Mitch Light, senior editor for college football from The Athletic. We're going to be getting into all things college football. Mitch, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. Appreciate you taking time to be in here.
Great, thanks.
You're babysitting Rex Road by day and by night now, so it's good stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Well, he ditched me.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I am I've been Joe's editor twice during my 3 years at The Athletic, and on, off now.
Keeps escaping.
Yes.
You keep escaping me.
So maybe
intentional, maybe not intentional. We'll see.
But I do manage to I take him out to lunch. We go to lunch every once in a while, and we supposedly talk work. But basically, I just want to get a free lunch. I want a lunch reimbursed.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, this is on the radio, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. We're on?
Oh, this thing works?
Yeah. So,
management isn't watching.
Yeah, I'm sure they listen to your show every day.
Intently.
No offense.
Carefully monitoring.
That's right. You
know. Yes. No, we talk shop, though.
Yeah, talk shop.
I throw some ideas at you.
These are work lunches.
Yeah. Well,
Mitch is as good as it gets in the college football world, so we're excited to have you in for the next hour. What do you make of all the Northwestern stuff right now? Pat Fitzgerald showing the door last night. We talked about this on the show yesterday. It goes from 2 weeks to all of a sudden he has now been fired and is out at Northwestern amid the hazing scandal and the allegations that are taking place. What's your reaction to what we've seen going on at Northwestern?
Yeah, wild scenario. And before we dive specifically into that, fun fact, not to make light of anything going on by a fun fact, but the Northwestern AD for now, Derek Gregg, scored 3 touchdowns in his collegiate career, all in one game. In Vanderbilt's 59-28 loss at Alabama in 1990, it was the first road game I ever covered for the Vanderbilt Hustler.
Wow,
that's a lot to unpack, right there.
I bet
Mitch.
You did not know that. That talk about filling talk radio time for the next. But I remember that game. You know, I was 18, 19 years old. I'm in the press box at Bryan Denny Stadium. This is the coolest thing. I'm randomly sitting next to an NFL scout. You know, in the press box, and he's just watching warm ups, and he's just. To no one, he's just, I don't know what Derek Gregg's number was. Let's say it was number 5. He's like, man, that number 5 is awful. Like, I guess he dropped like 2 or 3 passes in warm-ups, and then he scored 3 touchdowns that game, the only 3 in his career.
Did you say, like, in your face?
Yeah, every time I was like, yeah, first-rounder, baby. That's why the Jets stink, because, you know, they won't take Derek Gregg. So, yeah, I mean, before I get to the football, have you guys looked at what's going on with Northwestern baseball too?
Yeah,
I mean,
there's
I follow college baseball pretty closely, and they Army has been very good at baseball. Just randomly, like they made 5 straight regionals. So they have this coach Jim Foster, and I remember looking him up.
Which, by the way, the same name as their former basketball coach, right? Or no, Bill Foster
at Army.
Northwestern.
Oh, Northwestern. Yeah, going way back.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
so,
yes.
So I thought you were going to say Jim Foster, same name as former Vanderbilt women's basketball
coach.
Joe's easily confused.
We have a lot of.
Says the guy who just called Northwestern Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
So, you know, one of my pastimes, I enjoy like diving into coaching history. You go to Wikipedia, like, what's this guy's deal? Like, Jim Foster. So he was a successful head coach at Rhode Island, and he just left Rhode Island to take another job and then became the head coach in Army. So I'm like, that's kind of weird. You just don't leave a job. And I don't know, did you read the report? Evidently, one of his players at Rhode Island died during a workout. So the point being, there's baggage with this guy. So if you're Northwestern, it's easy for me to say, oh, that's a good hire. You know, you won an Army. But that's why ADs get paid money, is to vet coaches and figure out, like, okay, why did you leave Rhode Island? Let's talk to the people at Army. You know, why – Army's a different culture, sure. But the stuff that was going on with Northwestern baseball, I'm not going to say it's worse than the football. It's different. But early this year, they got up to like an 0-5 start. 2 of their coaches left the program. Just college baseball doesn't get the kind of scrutiny. If that would happen at a Power 5 college football team, 3 games in and 2 of your top assistants leave, everyone's looking at that.
Right.
So I think the days – going back to Derek Gregg, I think his days are numbered, because I think they're going to have to make a change with the baseball too. So
yep.
the thing about the football is, and you know, I'm sure you guys saw last night and have talked about it, you know, Pat Fitzgerald's already lawyered up. I mean, if he's, and I'm sure they're trying to fire him with cause.
Yes.
But if they're saying,
which they should have done in the first place,
right,
if they were going to do it.
But yeah, you can't go from 2 week suspension to firing someone with no new evidence. The report hasn't changed.
Right.
So, and the thing I was thinking on the way over here, thinking about trying to gather my thoughts on this, and it's like, if they would, what's a proper, so like, if you were going to say before this report came out, you're the Northwestern president, do you suspend him for a year? Like, if they suspended him for a year, is that, do you think he's still the coach? Like, do you think that, wow, that's harsh? And then further stuff comes out, do you still think he has his job?
Ooh, that's a good question.
And have we? It seems like we've seen that in college.
Yeah,
like, guys have been that. That seems pretty harsh, and it's kind of no. I'm thinking about recruiting a lot. It's like, well, how do you recruit when that happens? Well, you know what? Their class of 2024, kids who aren't going to play this year,
yeah,
is almost done.
And
so, sure, you're going to lose some kids. It's going to hurt for a year, but I think Pat Fitzgerald survives that if they would have done that. Like, or do you do six games? I don't know. So I'm throwing it out to you guys. Like, what would have been deemed acceptable?
Well, the part that makes this interesting, and Joe, you can tell me if you agree on this, and we talked about this earlier. 2019, they're 3-9. 2020, they're 7-2. 2021, they're 3-9. Last year, they're 1-11.
Yeah, they have not been. Take out the COVID year too,
yeah,
which is, the games count.
Right,
but they have been bad.
It's right. Gone the other way.
Yeah.
So
right.
How much does that part of it
into it? Too? I will say, I'm not a cynical guy, so you guys could, like, this is not one of those cases where someone's still the coach because they win a lot of games. Like, I don't think his record has anything to do with the decision to fire. Do you agree?
Well, I think,
'cause he's Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern.
Yeah, but I do think that, I don't know if I agree that nothing. I mean, I think that as you're sitting there talking through it, right, you're probably like, and also, by the way, at some point somebody says, by the way, like, we stink.
Well, right? Maybe that's why they stink, because the stuff going on. I don't know that.
I don't know. But I think it's one of the weakest and weirdest administrative just behaviors I've ever seen.
And this guy was at the president. What's his name? He was at Oregon before this. He was the president of Oregon. Like, I once I looked that up, I knew it. I was like, oh, yeah, that's where it came from. But I was thinking, okay, maybe this guy – before that, he was at University of Chicago. So maybe he's at University of Chicago. You just don't have to make decisions like this. He hasn't been around big-time college athletics, but he was at Oregon.
Yeah.
He was the president of Oregon.
I mean, do you think that based on the information that we have on this, that this is fireable? Just take out the performance on the field, that this is a fireable offense.
Okay, I will say I have followed this closely. I have not read every detail. One of the things in my job now is, like, I pay attention to the stuff I have to pay attention to. Like,
sure.
I don't work with a writer who covers Northwestern. It's not something that happened locally where me and you might have a conversation about it. Like, how do we handle this? I don't know. I said probably, but I would have to read the entire report. See, what I saw from the outside looking in was, being on social media, okay, someone found a former player that says, no, this didn't happen, it's exaggerated. An hour later, someone finds another reporter that says, a former player says, this did happen,
right,
and it was bad. I would lean towards yes, but not a 100% no doubt about it. I'd have to dive in a little bit more.
If you make this pivot with no new information, to me, you at least have to say, you know what, we need to do more. We have this independent investigation. Great. Okay, we need to talk to every guy on this team. And they don't even, like, get on a Zoom with them, apparently.
Right.
They just listen to the outside noise about what's going on, and then, oh, okay, fire them.
That's right.
Just bizarre.
That's the bizarre part. Like, I think you can just say, okay, they admit they aired on a Friday news dump. We're going to put Coach Fitzgerald on a month leave.
Yeah.
And we're gonna
still
dive
fire
more.
Someone after that.
We're gonna
administrative leave for a month.
Yeah. But the way it was, like, you know, what were they going to have, like a locker room monitor? I mean,
right.
It got to the point where I think they had no choice. But I think if they would have at the front end said, hey, we admit there's a culture problem here. You can't do – this isn't 1970. You can't do this stuff anymore.
Yeah, without question.
We're going to suspend you for a year. You can't recruit during this time, but you're Pat Fitzgerald. You are Northwestern football. I think that's something where he would still be the coach.
Well, and the most – we talked about this earlier, but the most amazing part of it, he's 2 years into a 10-year contract of just over $57 million. I mean, that's where the with cause part of it comes in, too, of you know, there's still 8 years left on that contract for Northwestern and Pat Fitzgerald.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting because, again, it's like, yeah, it's like the news dump and also like 2 weeks in the deadest time
when,
of the
when
entire
coaches take
year,
vacation.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
yeah.
To, no, no, you're fired. I mean, that's, I think Fitzgerald, if he has a good lawyer, is going to
well, evidently he
do
does.
Well.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And so where does he, is he a NFL, you know, NFL teams have been supposedly interested in him. Is he a defensive coordinator in the NFL, a linebackers coach in next year, 2 years? Obviously, if he wants to, he can take some time off. But
that's probably about
that's
right.
Probably
like a
where
position
would,
coach.
Like, yeah, because right now, like, with is another college team hiring him right now with all this stuff swirling about? It depends on, I guess, how the rest of this investigation goes and what the lawsuit and all those things look like. But I think the NFL makes a lot of sense for
yeah.
his next.
Yeah,
next
he's
spot.
Especially short term.
Right,
yeah.
He's. I wouldn't say he's unhirable for a college team forever. I think you rehabilitate your
based
image.
On the information.
Yes,
we have now.
Based on he could say, yeah, this stuff went on. I knew there was some stuff going on. I didn't know this to what degree. Like, I think if properly vetted, because other than that, he has a squeaky clean image. I mean,
right.
no
improprieties. I legitimately, I think most people in college football would still probably say, yeah, he's one of the good guys. But, you know, doesn't mean much. If you let this go on in your program, it has to come back to you.
So
it's ridiculous.
If you would have said 5 years ago that David Shaw, a Stanford alum, and Pat Fitzgerald, a Northwestern alum, you know, wouldn't be at their alma maters for different reasons, but one for performance and one for other things in you know, 2023.
You'd be surprised.
You'd be very surprised.
Yeah.
We'll have more with Mitch Light coming up next. We'll get into Vanderbilt, what they could look like in Clark Lee's third year coming up next. Also get into the Tennessee Vols with Joe Milton as the starting quarterback. Well, we love discussing Joe Milton here on this program.
More
we'll do
Joe
all that
Milton.
Coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, helping home buyers and sellers in Middle Tennessee for 20 years. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser, and Mitch Light in studio for the next hour, discussing all things college football.
Can I just do the text line real quick? Josh yeah. from Kentucky, is that Andrew Luck on my radio? I swear I thought Andrew Luck was on the show. And Brock says, why does this guy sound like Andrew Luck? Robbie, did you rant around Luck? All of a sudden, Luck comes into the office. Bold move.
Well, I am not.
I never knew that you sounded like Andrew
if you
Luck.
Watch
I am not a Hall of Famer.
It actually is Andrew Luck.
I am not a Hall of Famer.
So, yeah, well, I think you yet. Have a better yeah. case yeah. for yeah. Hall of Fame than Andrew Luck yeah. does.
Yes. I have actually heard that before, that I sound like Andrew Luck. I never even thought that until, you know.
See, I need, yeah.
It's Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Andrew Luck here with you this morning.
I never have thought that, but that's two for two on the text line. So.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Interesting.
Yeah,
pretty
must good. Be something there.
That's right. Yeah. Must yeah. be. So, Mitch, what are your thoughts on Vanderbilt? It's year three for Clark Lee heading into this year, and we saw some positive momentum at the end of last year, the Tennessee game notwithstanding, but you take down Kentucky on the road, you take down Florida at the end of last year, get a couple of SEC wins, and there was an excitement level from Vanderbilt fans to close out the year last year of – you're finally starting to see some progress and some fruits kind of pay off there for Clark Lee. So as we sit here today heading into year three, what's your outlook for this Vanderbilt team heading into this year?
Yeah, there's no doubt that they desperately needed those two or just one of the SEC wins. Like, it's just really difficult. Even if you're a Clark Lee believer and a Barton Simmons evaluator believer and you thought they were on the right path, it's just really difficult to keep any momentum from back-to-back 0-8 seasons. So they would still be saying the same things, and internally, they would still be, we're on the right path, but you got to have some tangible results. And they got it, finally, in the Kentucky game. And then Florida was convincing. You know, I'm a big believer in margin of victory in college football. Like, you can't, especially you play 8 conference games, not all 4-4s or 5-3s are created equally. You know, I was looking yesterday at some – and sure, there's circumstances in every game. Late touchdowns can make it a one-score game and all that. But, you know, I guess my point was, like, the Florida game was a one-score game. They were in control of that game all the way through. The Kentucky game needed some needed some breaks. So there was a fourth down pass interference, but they made the plays to win the game. But the point also is they played better late in the year. You know, the South Carolina game, it got out of hand. But if you watch that game offensively, they finally looked like they were doing some things. The Missouri game, they made a late run. So I would say there's really nothing that fluky about those two wins late in the year. So I think defensively, they are probably in much better shape than they've been in 5 or 6 years. They obviously think they have the quarterback in place. I would say it's probably their best wide receiver core in years. A little concerned about running back. You know, Ray Davis was really good.
Yep.
And obviously he's probably going to be starting running back at Kentucky now.
Yeah.
I think that's the one guy, you know, they did a very good job as a program. If you would have told me at the end of last year that this would have been the depth chart I'm looking at right now, and it would still have Will Shepard and some of the guys they like on defense, you know, C.J. Teller, I'd been surprised in this portal era, this NIL era. So if it's the NIL collective, whatever they did a very good job retaining the talent they wanted to retain. Now, if you talk to certain people, they weren't necessarily that sad to see Ray Davis go. Well, I'm telling you, he was a good running back, and yeah, they might miss him. So it could be a true freshman starting there. So that's maybe one position where you can kind of plug a guy in, and depends more on your offensive line and your creativity as an offense there. So I think we will continue to see more progress this year. But in the SEC with the schedule, what does progress look like? It might look like 2-6 again. It might look – they could go 1-7 and be a better team. So, yeah. But I think for Vanderbilt, if you're just looking at it from the outside, you just want to see continued progress. There isn't a win-now mentality. I'm sure they want to win more games. The more you win, it helps in recruiting. But I think they're definitely on the right path.
What do you think about the offensive line? Because that is – I feel like there's some excitement around some of the young guys coming up, and that they could overall have a kind of a higher talent level. But
yeah, I thought they did a good job with the offensive line. I thought heading into last year and they had some injuries, it was just like, yeah, you know. And that's why I kind of, before the season, I was like a Mike Wright fan. It's like, if you're going to struggle on the offensive line, you need a guy that's going to be able to create some things. And they think they realized in the Wake Forest game, that sounds good. But if there's no threat to throw the ball down the field at all, then, you know, you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
Now, someone's listening and say, hey, wait, wasn't Mike Wright the starting quarterback and their two wins? Yeah, I get that. So, yeah, I think they feel pretty good about the offensive line. I think they've done a very good job developing. It's never going to be an elite line. I just think it needs to be adequate, and I thought it was adequate last year, and I think it'll be adequate this year.
What did you see from A.J. Swan last year, and how much of a jump do you think he could take this year?
I think we are so often – our opinions on guys from our first, it's like the first time we see a guy is like, whoa, like in that Northern Illinois game, they were really struggling. He made some amazing plays, some amazing throws. So it's like, okay, he's the guy. And I'm not doubting he's the guy, but, you know, after that, it wasn't great. I mean, and a lot of that's the entire offense. And then he got hurt multiple times. So I think I know they obviously think highly of him, the fact that they made him the backup quarterback basically as a true freshman over Ken Seal. So I think he is a good quarterback. I still think he has a lot to prove. The people that are the anointed A.J. Swan, you know, I still think we need to see it. And but he clearly can make the throws. He's athletic enough. He's not going to run like, you know, Mike Wright. But I think that's not the least of their worries, but the fact that they've got their quarterback in place and he's just a sophomore, I think that's a good sign. Would you agree, Joe, on that, this one? Like, it's just...
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I remember we went to... where were we? Was that CPA? When we watched their scrimmage last summer?
Ensworth.
That was Ensworth.
Yes.
Yeah, it was Ensworth. And I remember, like, that day, it was like you saw the talent, but also he threw a couple picks. You're like, oh, okay, freshman,
yep,
third-string quarterback. And I think he's talented. I think if he takes a big step, I think this team could be really, you know, could be interesting. But I'm with you. I mean, it's not like we saw a ton of really efficient play from him on the field. And then, like you said, he got hurt and stuff like that. I think it's big that Ken Seals is back as the two. I mean,
because Swan's got hurt twice last year. To have a guy like Seals, one of them nationally, probably the most experienced backup quarterback. So, yeah, I'm looking at Swan's game by game here, you know, and again, it's, you know, a lot of it's the opponent and the receiving core and all that stuff. So I call it the Reggie Ball syndrome. Do you remember Reggie Ball at Georgia Tech?
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not really comparing the two, but a little bit of a tangent here. Like, he had a really good freshman year, and he was like, oh, he's only a true freshman. And we just thought, okay, Reggie Paul's a great quarterback. He never really got any better. And so it was like, that happens a lot in college football, which is our first impression. We think that guy's great, and then just assume he's good. So, I don't know. So, slight tangent.
So you're there. An AJ Swan hater is basically what we've come away with on this.
Exactly. Not at all. So, but it, you know, it is interesting for all the people that think he's and he is a good quarterback, but it's kind of funny that Mike Wright was the starting quarterback in the two SEC wins.
Right. Is he going to start at Mississippi State, by the way?
No.
I don't think
Will
so.
Rogers.
Will Rogers.
Oh, yeah. What am I talking about? Will Rogers is back.
Yeah. He's but Wright is the backup, I think.
Yep.
Which is interesting. You know, they're obviously not running the Mike Leach offense, more traditional offense there. But that was a –
Why did he go there?
Kind of a –
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah. Robbie said it. Yeah, it's a little weird.
I mean, Stark Vegas, though.
And he was a guy that was –
I mean, come on. Who could turn that down?
And not that this matters and not to be all – you know, he was clearly, like, bought into Vanderbilt. Like, he was all in, you know, great guy, beloved guy. Like, he's – some guys transfer. You know, if you're a college fan, some guys transfer and you, like – you want him to throw like a pick six on their first time. I think most Vanderbilt fans like Mike Wright. They'll always be a Mike Wright fan and seem like a genuinely good guy. And, you know, I hope he gets a
chance. Great family.
Yeah. I hope he gets a chance. As chronicled by Joe Rexroad in
The
Athletic.
That's right.
His brother, Taco, right, stayed behind and still on the team there. So that's kind of in the portal world. There's going to be some, that's kind of weird. Transfers.
But, like, to me, it's not where they left.
Right.
But, like,
the landing spot.
I mean, I know that, like, this is months later that I'm coming to this realization on the air. But I just assumed that, Rogers was leaving.
I assumed he would go to a Group 5 place. You know, he originally transferred to UCF. I mean, he originally committed to UCF out of high school.
Yep.
I'm not saying he'd start there, but pretty good late season tape. Beat Florida.
Yeah.
Beat Kentucky. Made the winning throw against Kentucky, too. Yeah. You know, so.
So Hawaii, Alabama and A&M, Wake Forest, UNLV, the non-conference for Vanderbilt. You've got, obviously, a Missouri team, crossover opponents, Ole Miss, as they are every year, and then Auburn this year.
So it sounds like 10-2 to me.
I think 10-2 is right where it should be.
Auburn's not a bad draw there.
It's not a bad draw. Do you think a bowl game should be the expectation this year for Clark Lee?
That's a good question. I think it looks looking very 5-70. I think a bowl game is definitely within reach. Go back to it. Like, just look at that Kentucky game. The swings late, and they take the lead. Then Kentucky, 70-yard run? And then Vanderbilt gets a 4th-and-10, gets a penalty, and then, a third down. Mike Wright makes Kentucky has a weird coverage and lets Will Shepard get open. It's just the margin between wins and losses. I sound like, coach and coach speak here. I think the non-conference is relatively kind. Wake Forest is, as I've got my Wake Forest hat on where my son goes, so I follow Wake Forest football a lot more than I did a year ago. A good team, I think it's a perfect barometer program for Vanderbilt. Like, if Vanderbilt wants to be good and be a competitive SEC team, it needs to beat Wake Forest. You know what? You know who went 3-0 against Wake Forest? James Franklin.
Yep.
And Wake Forest, I think, is going to take a little small step back. Not a huge step. Losing Sam Hartman and some of the receivers they lost. But that is a winnable game if you're Vanderbilt. That's a game you should probably – I know nationally people would sit here and say that's a Wake Forest win. But if you're Vanderbilt, you kind of think you can win that. Yeah. What do you think right now? I'm sure you could find this anywhere. Wake's 6.5-point favorite? It depends on, obviously, how Vanderbilt plays in the first two games.
I don't know. Yeah, that's probably about right. About a touchdown favorite, right?
Somewhere in that range. It's at Wake Forest.
It's at Wake Forest.
So. Yep.
10 a.m.
Coming up next.
Yes. As my son noted the other day, is Wake Forest very sophomore early. To be. He's like, the Vanderbilt game's at 10 a.m.
It's going to be very early.
Yes.
That's right. We'll continue the conversation with Mitch Light from The Athletic. Coming up next, we'll get into the Tennessee Volunteers and their outlook for 2023. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook, live from our 102.5 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Mitch Light from The Athletic is in studio with us. We are talking all things college football. And Mitch, I got to say, in Knoxville, with Joe Milton stepping in, you got Nico coming in his freshman year. This is a very intriguing quarterback situation to me. I've never been more intrigued, I think, by the quarterback room than I am right now.
Wow, never.
With Tennessee, just because, like, Joe Milton and what he is and what he could be is just fascinating to me with the bazooka cannon of an arm that he's got. How intrigued are you by Milton and what this Tennessee offense can be after being arguably the best offense in the nation last year and in the aftermath of Hendon Hooker with Joe Milton taking over?
Slight tangent there before we start. Can you guys remember, and you know, back in my Athlon Sports days, I was much more involved in this and in all conference teams. On paper, a SEC quarterback situation that's not just not so great. Like, KJ Jefferson's good player.
Yep.
Definitely a good player. But he is, you know, first team all I'm got my Athlon Sports here.
Yep.
First team all conference, KJ Jefferson. Second team is Will Rogers, who Joe forgot about.
I forgot there he exists.
The forgettable Joe Rogers.
Yes.
Will Rogers. And then Jaden Daniels from LSU. Like, good players, but
it's not that guy.
It's not like there's been years when you do an all-conference team in the preseason and there's a Bryce Young waiting in the wings who you've heard great things about, but, like, you don't have the you-know-what to put him all-conference before he's played a game. There's really no, you know, with Carson? Like, he's going to be a good quarterback. He's the starting quarterback at Georgia, but are we convinced he's going to be all conference in the year? So it's just sort of like, for a league that recruits so well and with the transfer portal, it's an underwhelming on paper crop of quarterbacks.
It is.
Agree?
That's a great point. Now we're forgetting about Spencer Rattler and Robbie's favorite program.
Yeah. Stephen Lassen, my former colleague at Athlon Sports, who's phenomenal with college personnel, they rate the units, and he's got South Carolina fourth. So basically, he would have him as his fourth team quarterback.
But of all those guys, I think that Joe Milton may be the best pro prospect, right?
I just teed it up for.
Am I wrong?
I mean,
pro prospect, probably. Maybe Carson Beck is. You know, I don't.
Yeah.
Know.
Well, right, that's true. I mean, there's
Florida, Graham Mertz and Jack Miller, 1-2. You know, Georgia we talked about. Missouri's got
Alabama's intriguing to me.
Yeah, Alabama's the most. You talked about it's local, so we'll talk Tennessee. That's definitely intriguing. Alabama is fascinating. You know, clearly they did not love what they had in the spring.
It can't be Milroe, right?
So, who's it going to be?
I don't know.
I'm
just waiting on Ty Simpson to take over down there.
You hear not so great things about him in the spring, and then, you know, you get a guy from Notre Dame who was.
I
think it's going to be Buckner.
That's my guess.
Yeah. So back to the. Yeah, I think Tennessee's fascinating. I am fascinated to see Joe Milton, you know. Had the opportunity last year or 2 years ago.
It was
2 years ago he was starting quarterback and then got hurt and lost the job. I know Nico's there, but you guys think the leash is pretty long on Joe Milton at first.
I think to start.
Yes.
I think
not
start.
With the fans.
Not
with
the fans. Necessarily. Right.
I mean, the first overthrow, assuming it ever happens. Yeah. I mean,
it may not.
I want the first play of the season to be like a 20-30 yard out and him just throw it 17 yards.
Yeah.
He should do that. Just to be like,
one.
Like, oh. He should do it on purpose. Just like, you know what? I didn't overthrow him.
That's
so everyone needs to shut up.
Yes.
Go back to my point earlier, Robbie, about margin of victory.
Yep.
There's nothing. And we said this at the time. There was nothing. You know, we see teams that are – who was that? I was looking at some teams last year that – Ole Miss maybe last year climbed into the top 10 – weren't they like 7-0 when they were the top 10 last year? And you're like, okay, they deserve to be ranked there, but is that really a top 10 team? That was not the case with Tennessee. They deserved everything they got. They were dominating teams, no close games. Okay, they lose at Georgia. We get it, but they come back and they just run a decent Kentucky team off the field, and that's what makes the whole South Carolina thing so confusing. But this was a legitimately great team. And by the way, were there any weirder games in South Carolina and Tennessee and then Florida, South Carolina?
Yeah.
Florida just destroyed. I think there were some early turnovers in that game, but still. So, I see no reason why, you know, Tennessee shouldn't feel like it's got a team that's – it's not Georgia. It's still, from an overall talent standpoint, it's definitely full step and a half behind, but why they shouldn't feel that they have the second best team in the SEC. You know, a lot of obviously some they lose a lot at receiver, but to do what they did last year with what they had from a talent standpoint, because I'm going to say that's going to be the least talented team of Josh Heupel's tenure, but it's not going to be the most talented. It's not going to be the most talented team. So would you agree with that, Robbie?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I feel the offensive line to me is a huge question about this group. I feel great about their receiving. I know they lost a lot. I think Squirrel White's going to be a stud. And Brew McCoy's back. Ramel Keaton, I think, is a good player. I like a lot of their pieces. The Milton part of it is so interesting to me, because I think their defense is going to be better than it was last year.
I think so.
It should be. The Milton part of this is just really interesting, because if he's Joe Milton Orange Bowl version, I think they got a chance to be pretty good this year.
I agree, but it's even like Joe Milton Orange Bowl version, they probably had what? They have like 6 out of 7 possessions with like 3 and out or something. Right?
They did.
Like they had and Clemson's a legit defensive team, but then he makes those 2 red zone touchdown throws where you're like, I mean, my gosh.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he makes some big plays later. It's really interesting because, yeah, I think Hendon Hooker still, even down the road, I agree they're going to have more talented teams, but in this scheme, it's very quarterback friendly. But the guy was outrageously good.
Yeah.
He was.
Here's a weird thought. Like, and obviously Tennessee fans love Hooker and they want him to be a great pro, but like, if the early reports, the Lions, right?
Yeah.
Man, this Hooker guy, you know, I don't know about him. Clearly a system guy. Like, that's almost what you want to hear if you're a Tennessee fan. You don't want to hear these poor, oh my God, Hendon Hooker's going to start for the Lions. Then it's like, you see what I'm saying? It's kind of
a weird
way to think.
Except you want to recruit more Nikos?
I know. But like in the short term, you want to think, wow,
this is sustainable.
We could put Joe Rexroad at quarterback and we're going to throw, you know, and that's kind of what the knock on you can't knock an offense that's great. It's like it's the system. Well, I don't care if it's the system. It's a damn good system.
Put up 50 points. Who cares?
They put up, you know, all those points. I mean, there were the thing that impressed me the most. Well, there's a lot of things about Tennessee that were impressive. Is, you know, obviously we know scoring quickly. It's you might know the stat. Like, how many times did they score a touchdown in their first possession?
Yeah,
that is just really, really, really impressive stuff. And
yeah,
again, I'm all full of tangents. I got a friend who's a huge Michigan fan, and last year hired Minter, Rick Minter's son.
Jesse Minter.
Yeah, like the thing, he's like, is he good? I was like, I can't tell if he's good. Vanderbilt's defense, the personnel was so bad 2 years ago. The one thing that would concern me was that, like, if you remember that Vanderbilt team, how bad they were early in games. Like, even the Colorado State game they won. Like, Colorado State, like, went down in 2 possessions, was 14-0.
Yep.
Like, it was like dummy offense.
Looks like they didn't break a sweat.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, that concerns me. And that's kind of the point here is, like, out of my coach, I want them to be prepared. And you can say the Tennessee, and that's part of it, it's hard to prepare for. You cannot simulate it in practice. And they take advantage of that. They're up 10-0, 14-0. Like, you know, I'm a guy that flips around games. Okay, oh, the Tennessee game started. It's 14-0 already.
Yeah.
Like, I think that Missouri game 2 years ago was where we finally said, oh, they might have something here. And that's another thing, too. We see defenses evolve all the time.
Yeah.
Will SEC defenses not catch up, but how will they evolve? How will they – I'm sure there was a lot of – all these coaches have big egos who kind of rolled their eyes at Josh Heupel and UCF and all that. Well, you know what? They're not rolling their eyes anymore.
And honestly, like, the Briles system, for the most part, has done pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, if you execute it, it's just hard to deal with, right? I mean, unless you
especially
have Georgia.
The rules in college football, what you can do lining those receivers up. Yeah.
If you're Georgia and you can just beat everybody one-on-one, up front, and you can just play man, fine. But other than that, what do you do?
Yeah, it's a great question. 615-737-1025. We'll have more on the Vols coming up next. We'll take a look around the SEC just a few weeks away from college football beginning. Here's a looking forward to that. More with Mitch Light coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rexroad, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Kieser, Mitch Light from the Athletic in studio with us, talking all things college football.
Joe, before you start.
Okay.
The CBS music.
Ugh.
I remember when I lived in New York City in the mid-90s after college, calling CBS, like, this is pre-internet, or just calling just some random number at CBS trying to get like a copy of this music.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you trying to get an 8-track of it? What were you trying to get?
What are you making?
I love it so much.
I mean, yeah, you're making fun of me for being old.
You're older than me. You're older than me. By golly.
Yeah, but like maybe a few months, maybe. Yeah, I don't really know what the end game was there. Like, was I going to just go by CBS headquarters in Manhattan and
just drop it off?
So you wanted to just like blast it on the
loop. Point is, I was early on this music. Like, this is freaking awesome.
This is great.
Elite. You know what's going to be awesome when it leads into an Iowa Rutgers game?
Iowa.
Wait, man.
Are they making fun of my Scarlet Knights?
Yeah.
Six to three in the fourth quarter.
No, God, please, no.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I forgot my question. Okay, now I remember my question.
That's what I always do. I just hijack the conversation, talk about what I want to talk about.
You know that I struggle with my mental faculties.
Yes.
No, I just want to ask you about Tennessee recruiting. It seems like things are going well. Not like outrageous, but really well. Like they're hovering around the top 10. Like, how do you think, like, just the stacking of classes that Heupel is doing, where is that pushing them?
Okay, I will preface this by saying, like, Tennessee recruiting in Tennessee has never been an issue. There's degrees of it, whether you're top 5 class, which they've been, top 10.
Like Philip Fulmer said, recruiting was pretty good.
Imagine that. Like, every coach who has come through has been able to recruit good classes for the most part because there's a lot to sell there at Tennessee. So no different with Josh Heupel. Now, currently they are they've got a good class. Not an elite class. One thing I've learned since I've become kind of the recruiting editor at The Athletic and working with our good friend Ari Wasserman, and we make fun of Ari for just saying stars matter and the best teams win, but it's the
friend of the show.
Yeah, you use the term stacking elite classes, building a roster that can beat Georgia. And sure, you can beat an opponent in a one-off, but do you have the type of roster that consistently year in and year out you're going to have the best team on the field? And right now, while Tennessee is recruiting well, they are not building a roster that will be equivalent or better than Georgia. Now, you might say, okay, well, you guys are talking about how great the offense is. The roster doesn't need to be as good. That's true. That is true. Where Georgia, I'm not saying Georgia doesn't scheme well. They don't have to necessarily scheme well because they have better players. So they're more conventional, I guess you'd say. So, you know, if you go by the 247 sports composite, and there's a long way to go, but, you know, Tennessee, one metric that I really look at is the average player rating, because the recruiting rankings are influenced heavily by the amount of players.
By quantity. Right.
Yeah, yes. Like at this point last year, everyone was Texas Tech is a top 5-3 class. Well, they had 22 commitments while everyone else had 10 commitments. Tennessee's average player rating right now, average player rating is 90.81, which is good. It's not elite. Georgia's is 93.48. Alabama's is 93.35. Tennessee has no 5 stars. You know, you guys probably talk about or heard about the blue chip ratio.
Yep.
Bud Elliott at 247 Sports has kind of made that. Like, what percentage of your class are blue chippers? Right now, Tennessee has 11 4-stars and 5 3-stars. So it's a very good blue chip ratio. That's a roster you can win with. Here's, as an aside, Florida, which has gotten, you know, things have not gone great for Billy Napier. They are doing very well.
Yeah,
their average player rating is – so their class rating is lofty, but really what you look at, again, their average player rating is 92.17. They've got 2 5-stars, 11 3-stars. So it's about building year over year and also class diversity. Look at Ohio State. The one critique of Ohio State is, yet they continue to sign top 5, top 3 classes, but an inordinate amount of their 5-stars are wide receivers. Hmm. And sure, you can play 3 at a time, but you can't play 5 at a time. You know, let's get some of those defensive linemen. That's why their recent run, they got a 5-star Justin Scott from Chicago.
Over Michigan.
Such a big deal. The average college football fan might roll their eyes and say, what's the big deal? Ohio State got a 5-star. Well, it's a defensive tackle. It wasn't a wide receiver. Like Brian Hartline, and I've seen his name thrown out there for Northwestern. And Ohio State had a lot to sell. But has no one in the history of recruiting, I think you can say, has recruited a position better than Brian Hartline has at wide receiver in the last 5 years. It is absurd, the amount of 5-stars. So the point being, when you look at someone's recruiting class, you also have got to look, are the players spread out? Are they all over the place? Like, if a team signed 2 5-star quarterbacks, which doesn't happen, like, well, that's great, but only one can play at a time.
Right.
So I'd say if you're a Tennessee fan, you're like, you're enthused about their recruiting. But are they building a roster that is going to be better than Georgia or Alabama? Not right now. And then you counter that with Doesn't do they need a roster? You want to be in the ballpark where you feel like our guys getting off the bus look like their guys.
Right.
They're doing that.
Mitch, we're a week away from SEC Media Days here in Nashville.
Oh, yes.
Joe's favorite event of the year. Very much looking forward to it.
So
what
great.
Is the – as we sit here today, what intrigues you the most about the league this year? I mean, LSU with Brian Kelly in year two. Obviously, Georgia's won two national titles in a row. But what intrigues you the most about the league this year heading into the 2023 season?
A couple things. We talked about Alabama's quarterback situation, so we won't spend more time on that. I think LSU's intriguing. I think there's one of those teams we just all sort of – jump on the bandwagon because you hear LSU is going to be really good, and not saying they're not. They won the West last year, but it wasn't a great team last year. They were good and they got better, and I'm a Brian Kelly believer. So I'm not sold on them as necessarily clearly the second best team. I think the SEC West is always intriguing because someone has to finish last, and there's more of a pecking order in the SEC East. Now,
yep.
Kentucky has made moves. We know that. Missouri wants to be, you know, but there's just – there's always a pecking order. There's really not a pecking order in the SEC West. You can say the Mississippi schools, but they've experienced a ton of success. Like Auburn, Hugh Freeze, Athlon here, my former colleagues, haven't picked seventh. Is Hugh Freeze going to really finish seventh? I don't know. They got some quarterback issues. Watch out for Texas A&M and Jimbo.
Yeah, that's I was going to ask you. Really
that,
what do you think about Texas A&M?
They lost a bunch of guys from that all-time recruiting class. It was – by 247 sports standards, the best of the modern era. But that's why it's important to sign tons of dudes, because you're going to lose some dudes. They still have a lot of dudes. They signed, talked about those defensive linemen. Their defensive line class was absurd. If Connor Wegman is good, former five-star quarterback, watch out for them.
Well, by the way, they
coming
go to Knoxville. Nealon this year. Yeah,
Bobby
say.
Petrino, you can say what you want, but an elite play caller, and I remember talking to Bob Shoup about this, former defensive coordinator, because there's a lot of things that coordinators need to be good at. You gotta have a system. But one thing we don't necessarily think about, maybe you do, is the actual play calling. It's not just system. And he always told me that Petrino was as good as it got, as good as it gets, is calling plays. Like, that's a skill, like,
yeah, for
thinking
sure.
Ahead, 10 seconds ahead, you know. And will Bobby Petrino have the ability to run what he wants to run and not Jimbo Fisher's kind of archaic system there. So if
they better get off to a good start, though. It's a great academic institution, ain't it?
There we go.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to debate, like, do I make a motorcycle joke or not? I'm gonna refrain. That is interesting, though.
Did you know, speaking of Ari Wasserman, do you remember a couple months ago when this was in a story, so I'm not – Ari went to the – Bobby Petrino's friend's house in Texas,
yes.
Knocked, cold called.
Yeoman's work.
Yes.
By Ari.
I remember he called me driving
did
home.
Did Ubbin buy him like a huge dinner? Ari
called me like at 10 o'clock one night. He's like, that was the scariest thing I've ever done.
Just terrified.
Well, because he went to one house, and it was the mom's house or some former house, and then he got the address for the new house, the different house where she was actually at. But clearly they had told – there was a call, so she was expecting, and the husband now was expecting. It was,
yeah, it's crazy.
They need to make a movie about this.
You're getting Oscared right now.
You are?
You're so, Oscar right.
Is that what that music – should I stop talking?
Thanks for being with us, man. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Anytime.
Mitch Light from The Athletic with us here on Robbie and Rex Show. That does it for us today. The Chase McCabe Show is up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.